So this morning, before we start our discussion, we will read the Declaration of the United Lodge of Theosophists and the announcements. We'll start with the Declaration. The policy of this lodge is independent devotion to the cause of Theosophy, without professing attachment to any theosophical organization. It is loyal to the great founders of the Theosophical movement, but does not concern itself with dissensions or differences of individual opinion. The work it has on hand and the end it keeps in view are too absorbing and too lofty to leave it the time or inclination to take part in side issues. That work and that end is the dissemination of the fundamental principles of the philosophy of Theosophy and the exemplification in practice of those principles. Through a truer realization of the self, a profounder conviction of universal brotherhood. It holds that the unassailable basis for union among theosophists, wherever and however situated, is similarity of aim, purpose, and teaching, and therefore has neither constitution, bylaws, nor officers, the sole bond between its associates being that basis. And it aims to disseminate this idea among theosophists in the furtherance of unity. It regards as theosophists all who are engaged in the true service of humanity, without distinction of race, creed, sex, condition, or organization. And it welcomes to its association all those who are in accord with its declared purposes and who desire to fit themselves by study and otherwise to be the better able to help and teach others. The true theosophist belongs to no cult or sect, yet belongs to each and all. So here in Philadelphia, we do our work as keeping these teachings and these doors open freely to the public. So on Sundays, as we are now, we have talks and discussions. The building's open at 10:30. The class starts promptly at 11 and it's over at 12. And being as we are here in the month of December, we are into cycles and cyclic law. And of course, today we will be doing the world of dreams. Next Sunday, we have an interesting question as a talk. What can life teach us about death? Then on Wednesday evenings, we have our study class. We are now studying Mr. Judge's Ocean of Theosophy. And those classes start at 7:30 and they last till 8:30. Also, we wanted to mention that this coming class for December 12th will be the Human Constitution. We'll be speaking about astral senses and powers. Then we have our library, which is a reference library, not a lending library, and that is open from 5:15 to 7:15, just prior to Wednesday's class, and all are almost free to use there. And there's always a student in there that can help you with any reference you might be looking at. Now, all the work that's done here at this lodge and all lodges situated throughout the world is done entirely by voluntary contributions of one's time, his service, his money, and his ability of attendance. And all are most welcome. And there are no obligations imposed or implied on anyone. So today, with our discussion about dreams, we will have it broken up into two sections, and we will start off with this whole idea of the three planes of human life. Now, we're all most familiar, and hopefully, with the waking state, the consciousness in our waking state. Then, from our waking state, we have that sensation of dreaming. All people do dream. It's been tested, and they do. There are those that remember their dreams. Some of them are very vivid. There are those who say, I don't remember any of my dreams. I don't think I dream. But that's the individual. So we do have senses in dreams. We're all aware of that. But yet, they're not physical senses. Because in that dreaming state, this physical form is at rest. Everything is slowed down to a slower thing, and yet in that dreaming state, we know, we touch, we see, we taste, we hear, and we wonder what that might be that's doing that when this physical body is asleep. And then we have, after that, that thing that we call deep sleep. And this is when our true higher ego is active. Whereas in the daylight and the early dreaming, a lot of that consciousness is of the personal man, the personal person. So those higher, there is a higher state above this deep state. And it is called beyond the dreamless sleep state, beyond that. And this is the state of high spirituality, where the real can be on its own plane, where most of the time the real just sort of overlooks that physical personal frame that we know. People speak of this whole idea with this higher state, which is really beyond, as we say, the dreamless state. And we think in that direction, this idea of intuition, intuitive knowledge. Where does it come from? Why does it exist? Well, it says it is a direct cognition of the truth. To see the light shining through. Almost half of our life, if we look at it, is spent in sleeping. For most, we might say, and what does that say about us? For most, we really don't know. Now, these different states of consciousness, we are more than any of the states that we enter into. There is a part of our nature that enters into different states, from that highest state of intelligence and action. It is we who enter it. And when we say we're talking about our personal nature and our individuality, our inner nature, our true nature, that nature that is there and oversees all, maybe not actively, whereas the other, that personal, is only in this one level. So what are the waking state goals that we could get into? It's not so much of what we go through that counts, but what we learn from it. Because most everything that we go through, there is a learning. There is that intuitive nature that just knows this is right or this is wrong. That is a deeper thing. That is a deep knowledge. And it is knowledge, as we say, is what we should desire, not comfort or not stations. Knowledge. And the connection between the planes and stages of consciousness is the immortal soul itself. Now, when we say that, we might say, but how am I aware of this immortal self within? This is the one that will be in the waking state, oversee. It will be in the dreaming state, oversee. And it comes alive, shall we say, and active when it gets to that inner state where it is on its own plane of knowledge. But primarily, it's interesting to think of it, it's sort of like that statue of justice, the woman holding the weights on either side, that woman in the center holding that weights. That is the true knowledge. That is the one that knows, that has learned, and has all this ability within it, if only we knew how to touch it in our waking state. There is that thinking entity, as it says, independent of the body and the brain. It's that power to perceive. So whether asleep, awake, dreaming, or dead, he is always thinking in a certain plane of substance, not necessarily this physical substance that we know of. And the man of spiritual being, that thinker, that perceiver, escapes to his true home, the plane of his true being, while this body, this physical body, is asleep. And when the body sleeps, we go back to that fountain of knowledge, which we have gained and within ourselves, and wake up in the morning none the wiser. For most of us, the whole day hits us immediately. Now it says, during sleep, we absorb life energy instead of resisting it. So the idea of being awake, we are actively resisting that life energy. And then, of course, when we think about this, we have to also think about that mechanical view of man. There is this question, how is the brain capable of giving off what it has not yet perceived? We might ask ourselves. If man is only a molecule activity of his brain, and his body can be experiencing in dreams, what has not yet happened? For dreams, through and thoughts and acts are very familiar to us. We could say dreams are night acts, and the waking consciousness constitutes day acts or thoughts. So there is this duality within us at all times. And whether we go up or down depends on how and what we know. So within these three planes of human life, Mr. Judge has a very good article and that called The Three Planes of Human Life. And it's in Magazine Theosophy 1 on page 331. So it can tell us more about this idea. So it says, spiritual beings we need not depend upon as vehicles for our real existence, but only utilize them, utilize this personal physical form for perception on the various planes of being. Once we can recognize that man inhabits not a product of the body, he inhabits it. The power of remembering more and more of our nightly experiences can be cultivated. We can actually bring back things that we have seen and been through and expressed, to be able to express it. It's something that has to be worked on. For some people, it's very natural. For other people, as we stated, it has to be worked upon. HPB states that dreams, a higher order, should not be called dreams, but rather visions, because we're visualizing them, we're seeing them. And that higher types of experience beyond can change one's whole lifetime. And these visions are unforgettable. Every one of us could say, there is a dream that I once remembered, and I can remember it and recall it at any time. Do we ever question what the dream meant? What does it stand for? What does it explain? And again, HPV, by cultivating the power of what is called dreaming, clairvoyance is developed. So we might ask ourselves, so why do we study dreams? It can lead us to important questions about the dreamer, about ourselves. Who is it, ourselves? Is this this personality that we see in the morning when we look in the mirror, when we comb our hair, when we brush our teeth, when we get right into it? We will notice later that there are things that can come up in questions that we have answers to, but this whole idea of that we have three waking planes of consciousness, we need to realize that they are different planes, and that we have the ability to oversee those planes. So now let's look into all the connections that deal with dreaming and dreams.
Certainly the world of dreams has made its mark on the waking world of human beings. Its influence has been recorded in ancient and modern history, in Eastern and Western science, even philosophical and religious texts give us many examples of the influence and significance of the world of dreams in our lives. And there are many, many phenomena. HPB in the transactions of the Blavatsky Lodge has done us a service, but by providing us with a sevenfold classification of dreams, but she adds that each of these seven can be further subcategorized. And it's interesting that just as in the sevenfold classification or constitution of the human being, some of those aspects relate to our personal, temporary, everyday nature, and others relate to our mortal nature, so too in these classifications of dreams, we see that some of them are truly visions and have their origin in that higher self, as spoken of, and some of those have their origin more in our personal nature. So we'll quickly run through what she says about these different kinds of dreams. And some of them will be familiar to you, others more obscure, but it does take in the whole spectrum of dreams that have been recorded throughout history. So we have first prophetic dreams, and these are impressed on our memory by the higher self. They are generally plain and clear, and it's either a voice heard or a coming event foreseen. And of course, in the Bible and other literature, we have examples of prophetic dreams, and we will mention a few others later on in this talk. And then we have the allegorical dreams, which many of us are familiar with. These are hazy, she says, glimpses of realities caught by the brain and distorted by our fancy. They are generally only half true. And as any allegory we might read in literature, it's a symbolic expression of a real idea. The symbol itself contains information, facts, that if we understood the allegorical symbol, we would better appreciate its meaning. So the world of dreams is symbolic. It is the language of the soul that comes through us in these allegories. But the significance of the allegory, the symbol, depends on the karma of the individual. So it's different from a prophetic dream where there's an actual image or picture or voice that clearly states, not an allegory, but clearly states the oncoming event. And then there's an interesting phenomena of dreams sent by adepts or by the thought of very powerful minds bent on making us do their will. She doesn't go into any more of this, but we do have that statement in the book of Job that in dreams and visions of the night, man is instructed. Fourth, retrospective dreams. So these are dreams of events belonging to past incarnations. And we have examples of individuals who had a dream, and it seems to relate to a definite knowledge about a place or an event that they had no experience with in this life, but the events, the experiences in the dream can be verified as being factual. And so in that higher self is recorded the knowledge and experience of all our previous personal existences. And it can come through in dreams. And so they're called retrospective dreams. Warning dreams. Warning dreams differ from prophetic dreams in the sense that a warning dream is a dream for others who are unable to be impressed themselves. So a prophetic dream may come through to the individual. A warning dream comes through somebody else who's able to receive the dream and then has the opportunity to warn the other about a possible catastrophe. In researching some interesting dreams in for this talk, there was an individual who, before he got on the Titanic, had a dream that the boat would hit an iceberg and sink. He had this dream before he survived, but it is interesting that he had that dream beforehand. Lincoln, as we'll see later, had a dream of his own assassination right before it actually happened, or the day before. So it's, for him, it's mostly prophetic. But we'll go into that in a moment. Then we have confused dreams. These are very often dreams that we might experience when we're first leaving that waking state, and we still have the memories and impressions of the day. And if we've been very busy or upset about something, our initial dreams may reflect that confused state. And then we have fanciful and chaotic pictures or dreams owing to digestion, some mental trouble, or such like external cause. And this is a dream caused by some physiological illness or disturbance in the environment that impresses itself on our dreams and creates a fanciful picture, which in itself has no significance or meaning, and yet, as we'll see, can be used in a creative way. So that's the outline. And we thought we might bring through several examples from the world of literature and art and science and, to give you some ideas of these different kinds of dreams. So we're all familiar with Mary Shelley, Frankenstein. And of course, she got the idea for the novel while she was vacationing in the winter at Lord Byron's home. Those of you who've seen the movie refer to, you know, to the idea that at that time they had a little contest on writing fiction stories, and she came up with this idea and wrote the initial story of Frankenstein. But she goes on later to say that in her dream that night, she had the image of this man overlooking this body that he had revivified. And from that dream, she got the general idea and plot for her novel. Robert Louis Stevenson had a dream which provided him for the plot for his famous novel, The Strange Case of Dr. Jekyll and Mr. Hyde. He had the dream. Somebody woke him up out of his sleep unexpectedly, and he was very upset because he woke up and he couldn't quite remember what he dreamed, and he complained, "How could you do this to me? I had such an interesting dream." The next night, fortunately, he had the same dream, and from that he wrote the story of Dr. Jekyll and Mr. Hyde. But that also happened in another case, which we'll see in a moment, which produced a very interesting scientific discovery. Director James Cameron was in Italy finishing up the filming of Piranha 2, and he contracted a very high fever, about 102. That night he had a dream of this man on fire, and out of the fire stepped this metallic skeleton with eyes all ablaze and red, and that of course became the character of Terminator. And so even our modern media is influenced. Now that might be one of those chaotic dreams brought on by fevers and indigestion, but nightmarish type thing. But even so, when it comes through to a creative mind, it's not a nightmare, but it becomes a gift for everyone. Well, into the world of science and technology, Elias Howe invented the sewing machine, the mechanical sewing machine, in 1845. He had this idea of a machine that would continuously plunge a needle into the fabric, but he wasn't sure how to have it work out. He had a dream one night that he was caught on an island and the cannibals were getting ready to cook him. And they're dancing around him with their spears going up and down. And he happens to notice that in the point of the spear, there's a little hole. And it comes to him, "Hey, that's a good idea. And rather than putting the hole in the back of the needle, we'll put it in the front." And that's how he came up with the technical advance of the mechanical sewing machine. Scientist Friedrich August Kekulé discovered the formula for benzene in a dream. Now, if you're familiar with the chemical formula of benzene, it's impossible to try to understand how this could come through to anybody, because it's C6H12, and you have these six carbon atoms, and they're arranged in a specific arrangement around hydrogen. And this is the beginning of organic chemistry. There's nothing in the chemistry up to then that would give them any idea of what it would look like. So he has a dream one night, and in this dream, there's a group of snakes, and they're swallowing their tails, and they're interconnected. And from that, he gets the idea of these chains of carbon atoms with these rings of hydrogen atoms around them. Niels Bohr discovered the structure of atom in a dream. He has a dream where he saw the nucleus of the atom, and the electrons are sort of spinning around it, just as the planets spin around the sun. Einstein, when he was a young man, dreamed he was sledding down a steep mountainside, going so fast that eventually approached the speed of light. And when that happened, the appearance of the stars around him changed relative to his position. And it occurred to him, hey, this is interesting. Things change according to my perception of them, and came up, of course, with the theory of the speed of relativity, the theory of relativity and speed of light. And many of his experiments were based on vehicles moving at the speed of light and what would happen. And it comes from that dream. Now, you may be familiar with a movie that came out a few years ago called The Man Who Knew Infinity. It was also a popular book. His name is Srinivasa Ramanujan, one of the most magnificent mathematical geniuses of the 20th century. The book and the movie just extol all the wonderful scientific and mathematical contributions. He proved over 3,000 mathematical theorems, and his work is foundational in the computer age. He said that the insight for his work came to him in dreams on many occasions. The Hindu goddess Namakkal presented him with complex mathematical formulas in dreams, which he just had to reproduce in the waking state. Okay, this is, so Otto Loewi discovered the chemical transmitter catecholamine in dreams. Up until him, the nervous system was thought to work through the transmission of nervous electrical impulses. But he believed, and had a difficult time proving, that it was actually a chemical transmission, what they call a neurotransmitter. And he had this dream how he could set up an experiment and prove that this exists, and he called it a catecholamine. And from his discoveries are a whole modern system of treating mental and nervous illnesses with medicines that affect the chemical transmission have been developed. But the experiment that helped him prove it in the waking state came to him in a dream. And finally, Frederick Banting discovered insulin in two consecutive dreams, one each night. In the first night, he had an experiment by which he could prove that insulin was related to the levels of blood sugar, and the second night he had a dream on how you could do this procedure and help with the blood sugar levels. He had these ideas in dreams, and of course in the waking state he went on to develop insulin and won a prize for that. We're going to finish up with the man we started with, Abraham Lincoln, profound believer in dreams. You know the famous story of him predicting or having a warning dream regarding his assassination. But he had many dreams throughout the course of his presidency, and he told his generals that just before every event of great national significance, he had the same recurring dream. And it was sort of like a warning to him that something important was going to happen. One of his favorite poems was a poem written by Lord Byron called The Dream. And we'll close our this talk with a brief recitation of that poem. Sleep hath its own world, a boundary between things misnamed death and existence. Sleep hath its own world, and a wide realm of wild reality, and dreams in their development have breath and tears and tortures and that touch of joy. They leave a weight upon our waking thoughts. They take a weight from off waking toils. They do divide our being. Perhaps you have some questions and comments of your own on this wide world of dreams.
Yes?
In reference to Abraham Lincoln, what you had mentioned, he served as president in 1864. The Civil War was going on. It was right before HPB came on the scene in 1875. And psychism and spirituality was rampant then. And there's been some research done that both his wife and he had contact with a lot of that. And many people told him that he was going to die by being shot. And they all came back to him, and he just sort of told them now.
We think you're referring to his interested in seances and spiritual, yeah. Particularly his wife. Yes, we've read some books along that line. Of course, his son died very young, while he was pregnant, while he was present. And his wife was, of course, very much upset by it. And he became interested in seances and means of reaching those that departed, as many Americans and Europeans did at that time. Seances, spiritualism was very popular. At that time.
We're told that we should keep dreams to ourselves, that we should only interpret, you know, what the dreams mean. But there's so many books about dream interpretation. Would it be detrimental or beneficial if those books were read by each individual person and then they interpreted the dream themselves? We're just kind of curious as to why we can't share dreams with other people.
Well, if we look at it this way, a certain symbol to me might not be the same symbol meaning to you. So this idea of a general idea in books of this represents this in a person, this represents this, it would seem it's too general. Whereas we'd be better off, suggestions are made, keep a little diary next to your bed. And if you wake up from a dream that really has you thinking about something, maybe you should write these down, sort of keep your own little writings of your dreams, because that same dream might be something completely different to another individual. So you can't really generalize dreams. Dreams are very personal and very individual to each.
We think the reason Theosophy warns about sharing an important dream is that you lose some of its power for yourself. And if you keep digesting it, that dream will begin to reveal something to you. But the other thing is, if you really trust someone as a spiritual mentor or as one who knows more than you do, you can ask them general questions about a dream. You don't have to reveal the whole dream, and perhaps be given some clues that will help you untangle it. But it doesn't mean we shouldn't talk about all the stupid dreams we have. It's the ones that are significant to us that we should hold on to.
Those reoccurring dreams. that might be a message trying to get through this personality, that a message that we need to know. So we should question those to ourselves, those reoccurring dreams. What is it trying to tell me?
Remember, we have this classification of dreams, so it would not apply that we don't speak about any one of these dreams. There's only one particular kind of dream that it is advised that we not speak publicly about, and they are sacred in their nature because they come from our higher self. They are those spiritual messages by which we are instructed in our lives. We have been struggling along a certain path of development, and we get a spiritual indication in our dreams of an insight, of a path to take, and it is for us. It's a, we might say, a sacred message between our higher self and coming through our personal consciousness. And as was pointed out, those things are to be kept private so we can utilize their energy in a positive way and not diffuse it. And it's interesting, in the Bible, you know, there's Joseph has a certain dream about a dream that relates to him. And in this dream, he sees his brothers bowing down all around him. Being the young, impetuous man, he goes and tells his brothers about the dream and what happens to him. Well, you know the rest of the story. They get jealous, throw him in the pit. Of course, later on, they actually do come to meet him when he's a ruler and bow down before him. So it was a prophetic dream, a special meaning for him, but the lesson is there, you know. Cast not thy pearls before, type of thing. The other thing is the allegorical dream. It's a symbol, and a symbol has different meanings, different contexts for different people. If you're driving along the road and you see a circle with a line through it, what do you do?
Don't go that way.
Stop. You don't drive that way.
Hmm?
You don't drive that way.
You don't drive that way. Well, where do you drive?
The opposite way.
Yeah. In other words, it's a symbol, but it can have different meanings and applications for people depending on where they're going with their lives. So what you do with that information is going to be different from somebody else. So you can have a general idea that if you dream about something, it's a symbol, but its significance has to, its message has to be figured out for you. It's an allegorical dream. It's half true. It's still from the higher nature, but it's blended with, it's colored by your own personal thoughts and ideas and desires, and so it has your stamp on it. And so only you can interpret it, the meaning for yourself. So it's no outside authority or book can tell you with certainty what it means to you.
And yet, you know, we have hints about how you should set up to go to sleep at night that can help you sort of remember certain type dreams. And one is, you know, it tells you it should be a dark place, it should be a quiet place, there should be no interference coming from the outside in. And the fact, this idea of recording dreams can be very interesting to individuals. Also, it says to put you in the mood of complete rest, find some sort of devotional book. Find a book like The Voice of the Silence or the Bhagavad Gita is a good one to sort of relax you and put you in the mode of rest, rather something that's going to be like a TV show or you've got your phone there but it's on. And there's a lot of light from that. So the idea of having a peaceful room to go into, to have it quiet and dark, and maybe prior to that you've read something of a devotional type book, something that gives you a soothing feeling. Like we, as we said, the Gita is very good to use, and in a way, we're all Arjuna and Krishna. We read about those characters, and we learned that there is a part of our nature that we should listen to, and we're just too busy with today's worlds to bring that about before we go to sleep at night. So those are sort of some hints to use to help you have dreams you want to remember.
So in just in line with that, we spend a third of our lives here in the dream deep sleep state. And it's just more important than our entertainment or having interesting dreams. It's an important part of our evolution, our development here in this life. It's an affect state, much of which we experience in dreams, that's determined the quality of the dream, the meaning, the power of the dream, its spiritual influence on us, is determined by the way we live our waking lives, the thoughts, the feelings, the actions we do, especially before we go to sleep, as was pointed out. But that message that comes through in dreams from our higher self, the soul on its own plane in that deep sleep state, can be very powerful and give us insights and directions and energy and inspiration and helping guidance from our own nature that we might find and might not find and often can't find in this waking state because we are so distracted by the visible sensations. So the world of dreams is sort of, quote, funny, but the world of dreams is a wake-up call. A wake-up that we are more than we appear to be, that we have a larger life and we can learn to take advantage of it. In fact.
Well, okay. Many times in our lives, in groups or by ourselves, problems come up. And we can't answer the question, what is this, what is that, why did this happen? We usually make the statement, well, I'll sleep on it. Mm-hmm. Mm. Could you tell us how that connection occurs many times? And when we wake up, we may not have a direct answer. Now we have to think about it.
Yep.
In order to come up with the idea of how we should proceed. And that may happen several times until, shall we say, the truth is revealed on how to proceed.
Yes, I think that's very true. That idea, well, I'll sleep on it. One wonders, how did that actually come across? It must be that enough people, and it could be in the fields of art or science or something of creativity, that they get an answer. And upon awakening, they have something to work on about it because something has come through. Something has come through, and it could possibly change a person's attitude about something in that area.
So the fact that our dreams can be very important and help us solve problems and get direction is why the emphasis is on placed on being in the right frame of mind, even in a spiritual frame of mind, before you go to sleep. So these dreams and deep sleep states are essential to our health here on the physical plane. There have been enough scientific and medical studies to know that if you deprive people of dreams and deep sleep, after a while they're going to become mentally deranged and physically ill. And of course, we don't do this purposely, unless it's some people might do it to torture or extract information from another individual, but it's not, but we, these things are come through investigation and studies of people who have insomnia or for some reason don't get enough sleep, how it affects their health. So these states are restorative, and if one is it's not by mistake that even in the devotional books it tells us to be regulated in our periods of waking and sleeping. We've heard before how the body resists and is worn out by life in the waking state and is reabsorbs life and is refreshed and recharged in the sleeping state. So if we have a problem very often getting a good night's rest, sleeping on it, even if we don't get the dream, the very experience of deep sleep, returning to that spiritual state, helps us come through in the morning with more energy, more focus, more of those faculties we need to solve the problems that are before us.
Have you had a point?
What about a circumstance where we know we're getting adequate sleep and we're in a deep sleep state, we never recall a dream? What's going on there?
Well, when the dreamer is coming back into the waking state, carrying with it the experiences of the deep sleep state and the dream state, that impression has to be made on the physical brain. And if the physical brain is such that all our attention in the waking life has been in a certain direction, more very personal and physical concerns, it may not be receptive to those impressions. So one of the ways of improving our memory of dreams is to not allow ourselves to be so scattered and distracted by physical impressions and sensations, to try to practice a kind of one-pointedness, to bring our mind and attention to focus on the task at hand, whatever it may be, to be more of aware of our thinking and feeling, not to let our minds be so scattered by sense impressions, which do distract us. In that way, the brain is trained to become more receptive, more impressionable. The example is given by Mr. Judge, if you pour water through a sieve, the water comes through very scattered and weakened by the all the various holes. But if you pour that same amount of water through a funnel, that force of that water is much more powerful. And so impressions in our memory and our brain are made more deeply once we learn to focus our thoughts better, our attention better on the physical plane.
Do I have what?
That point.
Oh.
Okay. There was another, yes.
Seems though that in our world today, there's so many distractions during our waking life, and these distractions continue after we lie down to go to sleep. What advice should we give an individual, or even in these rooms, on how to retain our independence, so much so that these distracting things on radio, television, everything, that when we lie down, our mind spins rather than relaxing?
Well, we did mention that calming effect, making your bedroom a place of rest. Turn off the everyday turmoil and put it at rest. And in connection with that, there's all sorts of hints that are brought through some of HPB's and some of Mr. Crosby's even. The idea of when you first wake up, have you ever had a feeling of euphoria? It's like a physical feeling that you have and thinking of, and you don't want it to go away. Maybe we should take the time. Don't just jump out of bed. Don't run into the bathroom. Start brushing your teeth. Start combing your hair. Start doing whatever you do. Maybe just to lie there and just think a little before you jump into the routine of the day. That can be very helpful.
One of the suggestions is to quiet our minds by reading from a devotional book. And one of the favorites, as a matter of fact, in the preface to The Voice of the Silence, HBB says that it's written for the daily use of disciples. And of course, one of the best times to use a book such as this is before we go to bed. And for those of you who are familiar with The Voice of the Silence, you know it basically describes the various stages of progress and struggle and obstacles that need to be overcome and bit by bit to achieve that highest state of consciousness, spiritual consciousness referred to in the first talk. And so we just wanted to read just one paragraph of that, referring to the final achievement, the seventh stage. When thou hast passed into the seventh, O happy one, thou shalt perceive no more the sacred three, for thou shalt have become that three thyself, thyself and mind like twins upon a line. The star, which is thy goal, burns overhead. They have become one star, the fire that burns but scorches not, the fire which is the upadi of the flame. Mm. In light of that, we wanted to read you the verses of a song, which having just heard this, hopefully will have a new meaning for you that they did not have before. And of course, it's the first and last refrain of The Impossible Dream from the Laman of La Mancha. To dream the impossible dream, to fight the unbeatable foe, to bear with unbearable sorrow, to run where the brave dare not go, to right the unrightable wrong, to love, pure and chaste from afar, to try when your arms are too weary, to reach the unreachable star. And the world will be better for this, that one man scorned and covered with scars, still strove with his last ounce of courage to fight the unbeatable foe, to reach the unreachable star. Our meeting's adjourned.
That's a good connection.
Yeah.